Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Sorry to let you down. Enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to ANCAST. I'm Zach Burchie. Justin's here.
Hey everyone.
How was London, Justin?
London was spectacular, and I am really, really missing it and going through caffeine withdrawal because of all the tea I drank.
How stereotypical. We'll talk about that. We'll have you on again real soon to talk about that whole thing in detail, but we got to get right to it. This is our, I guess, biannual Funimation show. This time we're joined by, as usual, as always happy to have him on, returning champion, senior digital marketing manager, Adam Sheehan. Adam, thanks again for coming back.
Always a pleasure to be on.
And actually, bizarrely, the first time we've had this guy on the program, let me see if I can get his title correct. He's the senior manager of social strategy and development. It's Justin Rojas. Justin, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're sort of like the public face of Funimation, and yet we've never had you on this program.
It's the first time. We like to think it was the public hair of Funimation. Yes. Face, not voice, I guess.
No.
You can't see me in this.
Right, yeah.
Useless. That's why you're not on here, because it's not a visual podcast. Yeah. Right.
And I guess we'll be joined for a little bit by Lance in a bit, just to talk about some sales stuff. But I guess Lance is now too important to even show up on this show.
He's very, very busy. So basically, getting time with Lance is like getting time with the wizard sometimes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, then we're honored that he'll still make time for us, even if it's just a little bit.
He loves you guys.
So I guess we'll start with the usual question. How's it going?
It's been very busy. People are like, oh, yeah, you're about to get into convention season. You know what? Convention season doesn't really stop anymore nowadays. And on top of that, we're so active online that it's kind of always going.
Yeah, it's the busyness basically doesn't ebb and flow to the summer season as much as it used to. It still gets busier, but it's more like, what are we promoting around that time period and conventions? It's, well, you know, basically maybe we have a big announcement here or there by fall and spring. We don't have to wait for a con. We can just do that online. So
yeah.
A lot of that has been, like, you think that would basically make it a little easier to spread things out through the year, but it seems like there's just more coming out now.
Well, I mean, even if we're talking about conventions, I've already gone to five or so this year.
Jeez.
That's been at least one a month.
Yeah.
So, and then, I mean, that's not five in one month. Like, I guess it's four in one month, basically, for July.
You were here for about a week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you guys keep your sanity. I just...
We don't.
Sounds
we
like
don't.
Hell.
Oh, God. There's the thing no is, it's like in the Avengers where they're asking how Bruce Banner keeps from becoming the Hulk or doesn't get angry. He's like, he's angry the entire time. Mm-hmm. We're crazy all of the time.
Yeah, that never stops. I think we came into this industry crazy. That's why we stayed here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a special kind of crazy. It's the Island of Misfit Toys. It's enjoyable, but oh, we're a strange bunch.
It does. I mean, like, the industry only seems to stay quiet now through the holidays. So, like, December, January, those are still quiet months. But February,
I mean,
March,
quiet publicly, maybe.
Yeah, quiet.
Quiet internally.
Well, now we have our own online store. So the holiday season now is the, like, hey, guys, here's some awesome deals to go buy anime and gift cards for your loved ones. So our shift in focus shifted. Instead of basically being busy in the public front and, like, telling you about stuff, it's, you know, basically getting into the holiday spirit of Black Friday.
Well, I mean specifically, like, the week before Christmas and then maybe the week after New Year's. It's a little more quiet then, but then convention season, quote-unquote, just starts right away. Like, February, there's like March.
We did Otakon Vegas this year, which is in January. So planning for that started in December.
That was late.
Yeah, because that was a very last minute.
But yes, we do get a little time off in the holidays, thank goodness.
Sure you do, Adam. You speak for Adam. I don't know about that.
I pretend. I take Saturdays off.
All right. Speaking of Otakon Vegas, that was a big deal this year because you had the premiere of Space Dandy, which went on to, and you help me out here. We were characterizing that as a hit. Internally, is that how you're looking at Space Dandy? Is this was a big success?
It was definitely a success for us. I mean, it was a new venture for us from a lot of perspectives. From the production side, definitely. I mean, the rapid speed that we've had to work on that show from, you know, all the production aspects of getting the video ready, getting the English recordings done, and getting that delivered to Adult Swim so they can air each week, Saturday nights. That was all a huge challenge, and we pulled it off. So overall success, definitely.
And Japan was...
to do it again.
Yes, we do. Japan was really useful, too, basically, on that. They were very supportive. They understood, basically, our turn-and-burn tactics on this one, so they would give us stuff ahead of time, which was always awesome to get the materials to work on the stuff. So it wasn't always like, you know, South Park, you know, was it how many days to air? It's pretty much we actually could get ahead of time so we could breathe a little bit so we didn't kill, you know, Ian and Joel who are working on the show.
Partners at Sunrise were a huge help with this, and they worked directly also with Adult Swim. So everybody was on board to make this happen.
And the fans seemed to love the idea of it. I mean, seeing the dub before, anyone sees the sub, you know, that's crazy. That's just that idea.
That's historical for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's something you can't, like, you tell me that just 5 years ago, I'd be like, no, that's not going to happen.
Right, sure. But I mean, from like a rating standpoint, feedback standpoint, like, are you looking at that as like, this is one of our top shelf, like, we're really excited about the Blu-ray release, we think it's going to be a big seller, or is it more like, well, it did okay, but we're not expecting it to set the world on fire? Like, how would you characterize it internally from, like, a how much money are we going to make on this kind of standpoint?
I mean, I think this one is going to be, it's different. It's very different. It's a different genre. It's a different type of production in regards to how we've released it. So, really, the expectations on this one are very up in the air in regards to the type of content it might be versus the type of, you know, the way the fan base has been built comparatively to traditional anime where it's been in Japan and, you know, people have figured out what it is before we even got our hands on it. This is going to be one that's, you know, we're starting from literally the American base is starting from the ground up on this series as a whole. With the pedigree that's on this, I mean, that is enough to really, you know, put our expectations into place in regards to the quality of the show. So, you know, we're hoping for good things on it.
The quality's there. We don't see that at all. Even when the episodes did change from director to director, but we didn't put this out as a, you know, basically we didn't expect this to be the next Dragon Ball Z, but what do you call it? We're still expecting, you know, good quality work from a good quality show. And again, the experimental nature of it just basically made everyone excited, and that kind of excitement basically just builds on the show by itself.
The ratings alone are not enough to get you to say, oh, we think this is going to be a big hit.
Have we seen one?
I mean, to be honest, I don't even know what the ratings are.
We've seen some of the ratings, but we haven't seen all of it. Again, kind of like going back to that, basically, looking at the ratings wasn't the number one goal of this show. It was to do something that's never been done before. The pedigree was amazing. Yeah. It's like with Sunrise.
Mm-hmm. Working with Sunrise, this has been a great relationship piece for us. Sunrise is a great company to work with, and we are honored to be a part of this experimental process with them. And you know, again, all the people that worked on Space Dandy from the Japanese side as well as the American side, it's been a great experience. And I mean, we're hoping for the best out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, interesting. That's an interesting way to characterize it. But moving on to shows that we know are a huge success, this week I think is your first Attack on Titan box. Those are getting into people's hands now. So how's that been going? What's it been like working on that show?
Well, dream come true for working on a show like Titan. I know a lot of people who have not been at Funimation a long time basically weren't here for the first time Full Metal launched. And this has that feeling to it internally and externally, the fan buzz and building up to it and people working on the show, how much they're loving working on the show and seeing the show just expand beyond even what things we thought were just, it's been great. So this week actually seeing, you know, beyond the Toonami broadcast, what he called from like episode 6 on 13 you can pick up, is pretty amazing. It's just, it's, Titan's a special little you know, show. It just does, these kind of things do not come along on a regular basis. So we try to treat it with like kid gloves because we get a little too excited sometimes with this.
Yeah, it's been definitely a breakthrough anime, not just for us, but I think for the genre in general, for the industry. This is one of those shows that is going to break through beyond just the typical anime crowd. From my experiences talking to people at conventions, talking to people not specifically anime conventions either. More pop culture focused cons, like going to Dallas Comic Con or C2E2, something like that. I mean, everybody's excited for this show. People that have never watched anime have heard about the show and have seen episodes, and I think it's a reinvigoration for some of the new stuff that's happening in anime.
It's bringing in that new crowd. It's making anime look cool again. It's basically people who have never seen it before, people who have left the industry or left the fandom and are coming back to it. They're seeing, oh, this is amazing. So, I mean, I think I was talking about on my Facebook page when this launched on Toonami first, about how this was a real big deal to a lot of us, being that you only get to launch these kind of shows once a generation almost. And I know there's some kid out there who's watching this for the first time, having the same experience when I watched, you know what we call Dragon Ball Z or Fullmetal Alchemist for the first time. And it's just, that's a special moment for a lot of people out there. I'm glad shows like this exist to keep doing that.
Yeah, we get one every, seems like every about 7 to 10 years, you get one hit. Which, one thing that's undeniably a major crossover success. It kind of sucks that that's how low the rate is, but it's nice when they do finally come along. One of the things you're doing with this is it's got a limited edition box that's a little bit more expensive and it has a bunch of crap in it. And you've been doing this since the beginning of the year, or late last year. You did it with Kaguya-sama Kiss and Psycho Pass, and I'm wondering how that's been going for you with those LE releases.
I think LE releases as a whole, well, this one's actually a CE,
Collector's Edition,
which is a Funimation.com exclusive. So this one's a little bit different in that all of the sales for the Collector's Edition are only happening on Funimation.com, whereas for Psycho Pass and Kaguya-sama Kiss, those were available at other retailers. So it's a bit different, but the premium packaging like that with the extra goodies is something that, you know, the fans are responding to, and we definitely want to continue to do these types of releases. The big part about Psycho Pass being that it included the Japanese soundtrack, which that's very rare nowadays to include a CD with music on it. And, you know, that's more expensive for us on our end, COGS-wise, which is the cost of goods, as well as the licensing for the...
Music live rights are always a thing, but there's so many people asking for it out there. Again, after all these years, I mean, basically anime CDs were a thing, and CDs weren't a thing, but the soundtrack still were. So basically people still asking for it, and, you know, basically want to pick it up was a big plus. And I know basically we've been showing them off a little better, a kind of nice little display we've been putting online, people actually seeing all the different materials in there instead of just saying what they're in there. People have basically been, latching on to these shows a little even deeper than I think the first round of limited editions we did way back in, like, 2005, 2006.
And I think that any anime fan that wants to see more of this, you know, you definitely should be supporting these types of releases so that we can continue to produce content and packaging like this. Mm-hmm. As most, you know, fans should be aware that you vote with your wallet in a lot of these instances. So as long as you guys keep buying it, we'll keep making it.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, what's it looking like? Are you going to keep doing them?
I'm trying to think what our next one on the docket is. I don't think it's been
sure.
decided.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that are possibilities, but nothing that's been announced yet, as far as I know.
So right now, it's not like that entire initiative has been canceled. You're still...
No,
absolutely not. No, even if they weren't sitting in the way they were supposed to be sitting at this point, like as in like how well they're doing, we'd still be looking into different options because we know there's a collector's market out there. We just got to find the right, what they will buy, what they're interested in.
And a lot of that has to do with the retailers as well. Mm-hmm. Now that we have our own shop on Funimation.com, you can buy direct from Funimation. That increases our ability to do special packaging, to include special items, without having to rely on, you know, specific retailers to be able to carry that or pack it in or whatever.
The exact size they fit on a Best Buy shelf. You know, we can go back to those wonderful creative days of the, like, the Trinity Bullet original box set or Basilisk box set and some of those awesome ones.
Jeez. That was a lifetime ago.
It feels like it.
Yeah. So speaking of retail, what's the landscape out there like right now? I mean, it's been a while since we've even talked about physical retail, like going into a store. I would imagine the business is shifting away even more from places like, I mean, you brought up Best Buy, which at this point is kind of a punchline. Like, people don't...
Second City, I mean.
Oh, whoa.
From Best Buy anymore.
Go to Blockbuster.
Yeah, right. So what's the retail landscape for you? Like, what would you, could you give like percentage? Like, here's how much we rely on the internet or online sales versus like, you know, physical retail, brick and mortar.
I mean, the majority of our sales is going to be via internet,
physical product on the internet.
So we're still, you know, we're still heavily a physical DVD Blu-ray retailer. Though the shift has happened to purchases via sites like Amazon, you know, Right Stuff, everywhere, Funimation.com now. When it comes to physical retailers, brick and mortars, they still definitely play a portion of what we do. I mean, you're going to have your Walmarts who are, you still want to be in a Walmart as much as possible. If they want you to make a very special thing for them, we'd say yes.
Which is great to point out, because again, only the best and brightest sometimes get in the Walmart, because they demand a lot of product. So basically DBZ again lives, we'll call it Walmart on a regular basis. And Attack on Titan actually has a DVD exclusive SKU, DVD only, in Walmart right now.
So, I believe that's the first time the phrase "only the best and brightest get into Walmart" has ever been
uttered. I see a meme from this.
Yeah. Well, that, okay, but at the same time, like even 5 years ago, 6 years ago, the chatter was like, well, you know, one of these major retailers goes out of business, like a Borders goes out of business, and it can take a company with it. It can bring a company to its knees. And then that's, you know, it's got maybe a year left. Are those days done? Do you think, like, so like Best Buy goes out, let's say like Best Buy goes out of business, like everyone's been predicting for the past like 2-3 years. How much of a blow would that be to you? I mean, is that something you fear still, or is it like we would be fine?
For us as a company, we've prided ourselves on being a very agile company. And so we adapt to market changes and, you know, trends. And that's one of the reasons we're still around today. So if that were to happen, we would compensate with wherever else we need, and we would adjust resources and kind of go with the ebb and flow of the retail market.
Yeah, we try to pride ourselves on forecasting what can be forecasted ahead of time. Again, when we jumped into box sets out of single sticks, that was a good forecast off of, I believe in Lance's case, in sales department, they all did well there. And looking again, as we mentioned, basically we have our own shop now. On Funimation.com, and we've been doing actually, we've been learning a lot since we launched that late last year, and we see if when people are leaving one place, they're going somewhere else. The fans aren't, they might be changing over from younger fans to older fans, people getting out of the fandom, people getting into them, but they're still there and they're still totally buying, so it just changes over where they're buying from. So, and now that the internet is a lot more prevalent, people feel secure on shopping online on places like ours or Amazon.
I think the shift now that we need to be cognizant of isn't necessarily if you're buying it at a store versus online. It's how are you buying it online? Are you buying it through your mobile device? Are you buying it? Are you doing more second screen type of things while you're watching a show and you're using your iPad to peruse, you know, the stuff that's coming on TV? It's learning those types of trends now that how we can most effectively capture, you know, our audience and convert them into purchase.
Yeah, the shopping is more of an experience now. It's not just go on there and you click and you buy. It's basically, it's like walk me through a process that I'm going to enjoy and shop here and I will keep coming back. Like, I always joke to a lot of my friends, I'm like, I try not to open my eBay app because it's like a freaking game. It's like, oh, look, I win, but I spent a bunch of money. Oh, God. But I'm happy, I think.
I think I might be happy. Yeah,
exactly. I totally won. I spent some money, but I won.
All these NES cartridges are mine. Yeah,
that's happened. Happened recently.
I'm sure. Well, so okay. So you keep talking about the online store that you just launched. So obviously, Adam, it sounds like maybe that was your initiative. That was your life for a little while.
That's still very much my life and some other people's lives in here. We obviously work on it, but definitely the store and the site and the streaming and the apps, that's definitely what a lot of my big focus with help from a lot of people, because we'd all be drowning here without it. But yeah, the shop itself basically has been great. We've actually, again, people might have noticed we've had some bigger sales in our shop the last couple of months. And we've been
promotions.
Thank you. They're more of a sales.
Everything's always on sale.
Everything's on sale. Look at that discounted price there. But it's special promotions featured around holidays or specific events, like our 20th anniversary that's happening this year. So we've learned a lot from that. And the one big thing we're seeing there is basically that we're getting better sales every single month, and we're seeing more people come and try out our shop, and we're getting feedback too for where things are could be improved. and more things they're liking. So we're taking that into effect and updating and upgrading on a regular basis. Pretty much nonstop, we're learning something new each day.
Well, but I mean, from that, you know, from your perspective, I mean, obviously they were like, okay, we need to launch an online store. Go do that. I mean, had you done that before? Had you worked on anything like that before? I mean, was this like a total, like, well, I guess I better learn how to do this from scratch?
Looking at basically, again, the development side like that, we had a whole team that did that, because I know code.
Doesn't know code.
I know code. Yeah, thank you for clarifying. That's why you're here. But e-commerce I'd done a little bit before, because we actually had a Z store, back early in the days of Funimation, but the internet was very different then than it is now. So it was a lot of e-commerce marketing.
Is that even a thing anymore, Z shops?
The Z shop was basically our shop that went away, and then we now have Funimation.com/shop. But yeah, basically I did a lot of education on that, learned from our sales department what they were doing, and also tied in basically when I used to run conventions, a lot of our, what do we do to bust up sales there, and use that as an experience. So basically tying that all together in the wild, wild west, which is the internet e-commerce world, and looking at, again, best performing sites out there, what's successful for eBay, what's successful for Amazon, Right Stuff, what are they doing, and, you know, different things like that, and starting from there. So it was definitely a new experience, but it tied into a lot of other experiences that I've already had. I just had to reform it in different ways, figure out which way to solve the puzzle this time.
Right. So what were the biggest lessons that you learned? Like, what are there, like, principles? You're like, okay, if you're starting an e-commerce site or if you're starting an online store, like, what were the biggest challenges, and like, what would you say, okay, here are the absolute, like, golden rules of starting up a site like this?
The basic ones, I would say, basically, is customer experience. Is they need to get in there, find what they want easily, and then get out easily without having too many hassles. I know we had some problems in the beginning with that, which we've cleared up and made it a little easier. Plus, time on site, page loading time is easier to shop. So basically, the customer experience, I'd say, is number one. Quality of content, again, your products you're selling, what I call is right behind there. And then third place, but not far behind, would be basically when they walk in there, do they want to be there? Is it a pleasing sight? Do you have the images they want to see of the product? Does that image entice them to buy? Is there easy ways when they're looking at something to add on something else? So there's multiple steps here, but I guess the overall it comes down to is the customer's experience is it's easy and fun. And are they happy with what they got? Again, once we mail it off and they ship it, if the product is what they wanted, and if it's not, how fast can we get back to them and get them what they want? You have the returning experience.
So, Lance isn't here yet. So once he shows up, we can talk a little bit about sales. But let's talk a little bit about streaming. Obviously, that's still a big initiative for you, and not just, but there was a recent overhaul to the site and your player and everything, and so. Moving forward, like, I know you've already announced some summer stuff, I think. Like a couple of things for the summertime.
Yeah, we did announce a couple things. We did talk about Terror in Resonance.
Yeah.
Becoming that's a big thing for us coming up this summer, and we're going to be actually doing the premiere at Anime Expo. And that one, again, it's going to be a new show out of Japan from the team that worked on Cowboy Bebop. And so, really big deal for us, really good, strong property. And in regards to streaming online, that's actually going to be part of, you know, what we're wanting to do. So, in regards to details, don't know fully right now, but there is some other stuff in the works that we'll be talking about pretty soon.
Yeah, summer's right ahead, so we're still, you know, the fans might not know this, but with simulcast, because stuff is rolling in as it's rolling in. So it's not like we basically get, like, all six, like, shows we're going to get or 12 shows we're going to get for the season and then hold on and sit on and prep for a month. We're finalizing these as we're going sometimes, because basically Japan's making them as fast as possible. The whole new world of simulcast is not a show that's all complete, so they're giving us information as we get it. So stay tuned, because it's definitely not the only thing we're going to bring out for summer this year. At least the things are looking good that way.
Yeah.
Right. Has your selection process for what it is you're picking up changed at all? We've talked a little bit about this in the past, and I think, go ahead.
I think our acquisitions process is constantly changing, and that's not because of – that's not necessarily why – we're not necessarily the reason for that. The industry as a whole is changing. bids are being made earlier. Content is being – pitched before it's even concepted completely.
Yeah, it's a kind of sketch art in a paragraph, and it's like, do you want to give us $1 million for this?
And, you know, I mean, business is business. So when you're talking about one show with one company, you know, they have these other shows, then you talk about all of that stuff together. And sometimes, you know, it works out that you get this whole set of shows or you just get this one. And it's a lot of negotiating going on, and it's happening faster and earlier. And that's the biggest portion. I mean, we said that last year probably, but it's happening faster and earlier than last year.
Next year probably faster and earlier than that. So, yeah, I mean, the way it used to be with the old acquisitions ways where basically it pitches a show which was almost all the way done or completely done and have a lot of art and know how it did in Japan and things like that and more information. Now we're basically going off of a lot more like pedigree and what's the initial cost for this to this just simulcast, see how it does there. Because, again, as much as voting with your wallets, you'd like a simulcast, vote while watching legal streaming is definitely the way to vote for basically getting a simulcast, you know, basically picked up for actual physical release in a dub.
Yeah, when we're talking about Terra and Resonance specifically, I mean, you've got a huge pedigree on this with Shinichiro Watanabe, you know, being the director, Yoko Kanno doing the music. You know, it's just got a, it has such a huge pedigree, and we're going to be simulcasting the show. So it was definitely something we looked at and talked about early as possible to work on. You know, while this one's not handled specifically like we're doing with Space Dandy, even though it involves a lot of the same people, the studio's different. So this is going to be part of I think it's part of the Noitamina block.
I believe so.
And rather than us working with Sunrise and all that stuff on this, but it's a lot of the same kind of creative team. But right now, that's our big one for the summer. And we're hoping a lot of fun.
Hopefully adding a lot more to it.
Mm-hmm.
Scroll that list. I need more simulcast views.
Would you say that year over year it's getting more frantic and competitive out there when it comes to picking up these streaming licenses?
I would say somewhat. Whether you define it as frantic or...
See, frantic, I think, basically is what we call it. Changing more, basically, the competition is growing. It's not just one person picking up all the things. It's not two companies just battling each other out and saying, you take that side and I'll take this side. It's more along the lines of, like, there's a lot of people out there seeing a lot of different stuff. And a lot of studios in Japan making new things. We're actually going to see Japan making some, you know, some interesting stuff out here. Like, again, Space Dandy, I don't think would have happened 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think basically the market out there is changing and growing every single year, as we mentioned. So I don't think as much as, like, we're in a panic like a stock market style, but more along the lines of there's just a lot more players in the game, which, again, competition makes this industry even better. So we
just have to get smarter.
You got to get smarter. Yeah, we have to get smarter, but everyone else will get smarter. We get smarter than them, and we got to keep doing that way. Mm-hmm. So in the end, the fan wins here by having this competition.
How did the Netflix acquisition of Knights of Cydonia strike you? Was that was sort of like, oh, suddenly Netflix wants to play in our pond here. Did that put you on edge? Did that make you think, wait a minute, maybe even more people are going to be getting into this?
It's not necessarily a surprise by any means. Mm-hmm. Netflix has been doing a lot of this stuff. I mean, Netflix has their own teams that go out and subtitle and dub content in other countries, taking English content, taking, you know, content from Asia and stuff. So they've already kind of been doing a lot of this.
This is the first time it's with an anime
product.
But it's
the anime part. Yeah. I mean, we already knew that they've had interest in this type of content and stuff. So it's not a huge surprise by any means.
We're really not too worried about it, and again, we don't think this is going to light the world on fire like a Dragon Ball Z or a Titan level. But they're going to start. We need to commit an anime section now and go direct to the consumer.
But I mean, talking of that, heck, if Netflix wants to make anime a bigger deal globally, that's great.
Please.
For us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing I always have to tell people is that we want this competition. Mm-hmm. To grow the anime market as a whole, because Funimation can't do it alone. Funimation
cannot reach
the mass media, you know, get into this mass media type of thing that like Netflix can do. When we acquire a new show, it can be a big deal, but you know, we still have a limited reach in regards to growing the anime fan base, and we want that to grow, because if that grows for Netflix, if that grows for Crunchyroll, if that grows for Viz Media,
Hulu,
mm-hmm. that means there are more anime fans out there in the U.S. that we can utilize as well, and it's growing our market. We do a lot of different things here at Funimation because anime, not saying is isn't growing, but it's, you know, you can only do so much with it. So we want to continue it to grow, and we need other companies' help to do that.
Yeah, we will go, high tides raise all ships. Everyone wins. Yes. The fans definitely do when the pie gets bigger and we get more people into this. Again, basically, you guys probably remember when anime was just, it was cool to watch anime. It was the, what I call it, was, you know, when Trigun was on TV and Bebop was first seen in its first circulation. And it was like, I watch anime and I tell everyone. And that was growing and growing and growing. And I see things getting back to that. And like, do stuff like this could definitely be help growing that pie.
Yeah, I don't know if anime was ever cool to be watching.
cooler, give me that. Come on.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think that's a good attitude to take. Is that, you know, it's still a niche product no matter how you slice it. You'll get like one or two shows like something like Attack on Titan every now and then that breaks out, but most of the time it's just this niche product with a sort of a set market that's really hard to expand, apparently. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, tougher. I think adding to that, again, the bigger ones will bring the kids in to see if there's what else there is. And I think basically the Titans will lead to the Triguns. And, you know, like all the Alchemists will lead to the Bebops and other things else out there. There's more gateways that'll lead you down the path to find more other good content. Yes, there is always going to be some smaller content for the really super hardcore fans, but that's our base, and we don't want to lose them. So I think keeping those small shows are very important to basically keep everything rolling during the tougher times, as well as when there's the good times are happening. They can be the ones saying, like, I was an anime before that was cool.
Okay,
Zach's still stuck on the when anime was cool.
That'd be a hashtag for this.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Dragon Ball. You've got these Blu-ray sets that are coming out now. I think you're up to like season 5 or something like that on those. And lots of complaints about those being, you know, forced widescreen and yada, yada, yada. I mean, obviously, Lance is still not here, but this is...
But we can speak to that.
We can speak to that. Well, that. With Dragon Ball Z, we're pretty covered on.
Actually, yeah. To be honest, I mean, why Lance said he shouldn't be the guy to talk about all this. He's not as involved in a lot of these processes and these strategy meetings as much as he used to. He's focusing on a lot of other peripheral,
bigger ticket items for the whole company, and not just Funimation, but Group 1200, which is our umbrella corporation. Not so. A company, a corporation, that's really bad. but yeah, Dragon Ball Blu-ray, so are you bringing up what's...
Yeah, I mean, Season 5 is coming out June 24th. Again, talking about the aspect ratio and the widescreen crop of this. Again, we mentioned this earlier, fans speak with their wallets, or vote with their wallets. And we did do our Dragon Ball Z release on Blu-ray, the level sets, 1.11, 1.22. Those weren't a success for us, and we talked about that, and those were going to be the more true to the original film grain, original aspect ratio. Fans have been buying the season sets that are full screen, 16:9, and it's a pan and scan crop. So this is a different crop than the Dragon Ball Z DVDs, the orange bricks. These are going to be actually panning to where the best content is on screen rather than just a standard take, whatever, 2 inches off the top and 2 inches off the bottom, whatever the heck it was.
Yep.
So this one captures better content comparatively to those, as well as has, you know, the remastered footage, cleaner lines, bright colors, stuff that people expect to see on Blu-ray. The buying market for these are people that want a Blu-ray that fills up their screen and has bright colors that looks very vibrant. And to be honest, that's the majority of the Dragon Ball Z buying crowd.
Yeah, I mean, these ones are selling quite well. We're very happy with the Blu-rays that do it themselves, basically, out the gate. So I know some people, again, vocal minority maybe, or basically just the hardcore fans don't want that version. That's, you know what, we put out so many versions of this, but there's got to be one out there you like. So the Dragon Box, of course, is always one that comes to mind for the super hardcores we got back in the day. But yeah, basically the Blu-rays have been doing quite well for us, and we're very happy to continue this and see it all the way through.
So definitively you can say that, like, okay, this is what the mainstream audience for Dragon Ball wants. They don't want that that previous release. Now, I assume the retail... Between those, the 1.11, like the level sets, like you were talking about, which you guys spent a lot of money trying to restore, And I, you know, a lot of people said, and I believe that this was basically what we were talking about, was like the amount of money you were spending restoring that made the release not a success. Like, now, the sales weren't there to follow it
up. That's not to say that the amount of time spent on those isn't very much off of what we're spending in regards to time on these Blu-ray sets that we're doing now. It's still frame-by-frame remastering.
Okay.
Yeah, the quality, better way of putting it, adding to that, would be the quality's not dropping off. If anything, it's getting cleaner, but the process over the years has gotten more affordable and more efficient. So basically, we can do about this, you know, a better quality of work in less amount of time and put out a better product.
And then the amount of sales that these are getting, you know, business-wise, still makes sense for us to release. Again, the level sets weren't up to par as to justify the production costs on them, and these do.
And we, you know, that's a very serious thing for us, being that we've only stopped putting out a Dragon Ball release partway twice, including that one. So, I mean, we've gone all the way through for everything along those lines, so that was a tough decision on our end. So we're happy again when we actually announced to bring out the Blu-rays back out.
All right. Well, so I guess for the super hard cars out there, tough shit. You get this one. it sounds like that. Like, if that's what makes sense from an economic standpoint, and you've discovered this is what the actual audience wants, then, you know, that's what you're going to release. And,
it's all economics, really.
It comes down to it at the end of the day is economics. I mean, basically, we care about what the fans want. We want to give them as best the products we can. And normally, we would strive for that. And this is what the fans want, because Dragon Ball Z is beyond just an anime audience. It's basically that kid doing martial arts right now.
Right.
You know, basically, it's, again, that Walmart buyer. The way called, there's a wide variety of people basically just into Dragon Ball Z that might not even watch anime other than that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the movie. You finally announced it. You're doing Battle.
Woo! Yeah.
Oh man, you have no idea how much like that's a relief for me.
Get that out there.
Just thank God.
You don't get that question in the Q's and A's anymore.
Yeah. Well, so what was the holdup? Because I watched this on TV when I was in Japan a couple of months ago. You know, there's a Fox logo on the end of this, so I assume that had something to do with it.
I mean, it's nothing specific. It's just the standard negotiation process, going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it just didn't happen to happen until now.
The bigger the property, sometimes the longer the negotiation process happens. And when you get more cooks in the kitchen, that's possible. And because Dragon Ball is getting such a big, popular one, even for us, we still got to go, you know, talk it all the way through. So, again, negotiations are all different for different shows and different brands. So this is definitely just one that just fell into that. It took a while longer to talk about it.
Right, okay. So you're doing a theatrical thing. Is this... Tell us a little bit about the theatrical release for this and what the plan is. Is it the same as, you know, when you would do those, like... Previously it was, like, Fathom Events, and I think you're using a different service now. But what's the theatrical release for this going to be like?
So this is going to be a basically theatrical event taking place... between August the 5th and 9th. 5th, 6th, 7th, and 9th. And so those are going to be the dates that these theatrical events would take place in select DMAs. The theater selections, of course, are still not defined at this point in time. We'll be talking a little bit more about that as it comes up. But right now, that's what the plan is. And we're looking to make this a really cool event nationwide. One of the big things that we want to push for this is, you know, Dragon Ball Z has impacted a lot of people's lives for 25 years now. And personally, I mean, it's a big deal to me. And this is the first piece of new content, really, from Dragon Ball Z that we've been able to release to
canon
our fans.
Content.
Yeah, and it's in line with the story. It's worked on by the original creator. So it's really important to us, not just as a... you know, financial standpoint, but as a piece of the Dragon Ball legacy. You know, we really want fans to think of this not just as a movie, but as an event, a theatrical event we're going to be holding that week of August. We want, you know, fans to really support it, not just because of their love of Dragon Ball Z, but for anime in general. This is a big event for us as a company, as an anime, you know, industry leader, and we want to make it as important to people as possible too.
you know, we are the House of Goku build, so if we don't do justice to this, I don't think we're justice to us. And there's too many fans out there that have seen us, how much we've put into Dragon Ball Z over the years, that we got to do the right thing and get out a really good event. Even the actors have been talking about how awesome they love just working back on this, mm-hmm. and just they're getting passionate back into it.
And just to clarify for anyone, the theatrical event will be dubbed English.
Yes.
Just, I know there's a few questions about that out there. Actually, this will be the English dub, so although some people have seen it in various forms and fashions that I won't discuss, this will be the first time you'll be able to see it in the English dub.
The more common question that I got was people really wanted to know whether or not you have the theatrical version of the director's cut.
That's I'm actually not sure right now at the
time which one we got. Yeah, which one we're showing.
I would imagine the plan would be to release the full the director's cut eventually. Like even if the theatrical cut is the one that you're showing in theaters, the plan eventually will be to have that full director's cut, like on Blu-ray or something like that, right?
Stay tuned for updates on that one. Right now, we don't have all the answers to that. Still further out, so. But we are going to try to double feature with Hikai J.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, no one's tired of that joke, Adam. It's fine. It's fine.
I promised Lance I would if he's not in here by 4:30.
To anyone else listening, that's a joke.
It's a total joke.
Not valid statement.
That one Hikai J cosplayer shows up. I'm like, finally!
Then he curses your names forever.
Yeah.
Okay. So since Lance is, I think it sounds like maybe we're not going to have Lance coming.
We might. He's still. He just texted me saying he's just running late behind on a call that might be going on for a while. So he might still pop in, but we don't know. But let's. You just want to go to the questions? I think at less the end.
I do. But before I do that, I really wanted to ask about if you can characterize the sales on Oni Eye for us, which was your first subtitle only release.
It's not a failure.
Like, that's as much as I know. That's I don't have the exact numbers on that.
No, it's pretty much met expectations on that one. Yeah. So
the good parts of the sub only release is basically again they don't have to be at a bigger level of a show. So basically those type of the fans we're trying to hit with those ones are a smaller crowd. So if they buy like we think they're going to buy, which with the show they did, we can put stuff out like this.
So more of that, people can expect to see more of that, or was that
it's
an
potential.
Experiment that right now you're sort of looking at and going, well, I don't know.
It's got to find that show if it's exactly that right spot where basically it's going to do enough to make a release, but not enough to be a dub. So it's a very case by case.
And if fans don't realize, I mean, dubs do increase production costs significantly. So being able to release something, to either have it not released at all or released subtitle only, you know, that's kind of the choice we have to make. And, you know, sometimes subtitle only is going to be the better choice. And we'll see how it goes for the future.
Well, why don't you guys just, like, hire people off of YouTube who will do it for free for exposure?
Totally.
We'll write this down.
They don't even need to come into the studio. We'll just tell them to phone it in.
Yeah. I like this idea.
Tape their lines on their laptop mics.
Just, yeah.
It'll sound great.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's... Justin, did you have anything?
No, I got nothing.
All right.
Good, thanks.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks for showing up.
It's what I'm here for.
Color commentary, got it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's get to the Twitter questions. And if Lance pops in, you know, I got some more questions about sales, because specifically that's what he was going to share with us.
Yeah, that's his MO. He knows that stuff. He is the guru of all things sales.
But let's go ahead and get to these. We got a lot of them. So let's try and burn through these pretty quick.
All right. So, one more answers.
Burning four answers.
Okay. all right. Anime Addict 2000 asks, why did you stop dubbing anime extras after 2012? For example... I hate to say this out loud. High School DxD Fantasy Jiggles Unleashed.
Oh, yes. I was like, are you going to say the Fantasy Jiggles? That's a wonderful one.
Well,
we dubbed some. I'm trying to think basically which ones. I know basically we've done one thing we have done. I don't have the straight answer basically on that because I had to go back and just like look at our list. I'm not sure if we stopped or when we stopped. But I know basically we saw that Japan was making less and less extras for video. So we started making our own ones that weren't on the Japanese release. I know Dragon Ball Z, the Blu-rays, are a good example of having, I think, one or two extras per release of those ones. You'll see more down the road as well. So if any answer I can give for that, basically, is we've shifted. If Japan's not available, we'll totally take them. But if they don't, we can make some ourselves.
Okay. Lazy Dude 500 also is asking about High School DxD and wants to know if the DVD and Blu-ray will be director's cut version with 3 extra minutes per episode, not the same as the uncensored cable TV version. I guess there's another series of this coming out.
Oh, so they're asking about the
TV
high school, the new High School DxD.
Yeah. High School new or moon?
New, I think it's actually
any new.
It's going to be based on whatever materials we receive, which I do not know 100% what those will be for the home video release. What is shown, I want to clarify, whatever is shown on streaming is not necessarily the content that will be on the home video release. And I don't know what
this Yeah, I don't know specifically on that one. If we try to get the most uncut, full version of each release as possible, whenever possible. It's not always possible, but we strive to.
Okay. Berserk Claymore asks, and this is a question you can't really answer, but I'm curious whether, like, how, if you're even looking at it or feeling how you feel about it. Lance did talk last time he was on about how, you know, I wish more people had been really into the Lupin the Third woman called Fujiko Mine, and it did okay, but it didn't really blow the doors off of anything. There's a movie coming out with the same creative team and everything behind it. Even under consideration, even looking at it, anything like that?
Do not know on that one. Is it what called?
I'm sure it's being looked at.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're looking at everything, but like looking at like actual full consideration. Do not know on that. The sales on that, of course, would be a factor, but we have to go back and look at this. Like, again, last time we talked was 6 months ago, so things pick up. Our catalog for our general shows do very well, so sometimes things might not do super, you know, like The World on Fire at launch, but it can pick up later on for either a secondary release or something like that. Kind of like Pacific Rim didn't do too great in the U.S., but did huge overseas. Kind of like that feeling sometimes. So,
and when it comes to movies as well, movies perform very differently than series. So if it's a movie based on a series we have that might have been, you know, not necessarily an underperformer, but not a breakout title, the movie potentially would still have the capabilities of doing pretty well.
Yeah, we like movies.
Okay. Also from Berserk Claymore, will the Helsing the Dawn anime shorts be dubbed this time with the next Helsing release? The first short on the last Blu-ray release was sub. You couldn't answer this one last time either, so...
Yeah, I'm thinking...
Oh, I think we have a Lance. Hold on.
Yay.
Come in! Hi, guys! How are you doing?
We have a Lance, thank goodness. You grab a chair real quick, because we're on one chair. We'll answer this last question here. Yeah, the Dawn, what do you call it? I'm not sure, basically, whatever was on the last one probably is going to keep consistency across the next one. So if the last one was subbed, it'd probably still be subbed. But again, I don't have the actual product specs in front of me. Those would be easy to find on that work, would be awesome. But so yeah, I don't have an exact answer again on this one.
Yeah. It would be, I guess, you know, the most reasonable thing just to expect would be it was sub last time, it'll be sub.
Yeah, but probably some consistency is we almost never change up things midstream. If anything, so you'd bring out the whole thing later on, done that way, but I doubt it would be for that one. We're just happy to get more Helsing going on here. All right, we have Lance in the room now.
Hey, Lance.
Change this to omnidirectional.
Oh, we got to move the mic so we can pick up everyone. Right.
You sound so enthused.
How's that sound? Sound okay for you guys?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, yeah, we already dropped the Hikaijin reference for you.
They stole your thunder, Lance.
I actually texted them to do that.
How's it going, Lance?
A-okay.
Awesome. So we talked to these two jokers a little bit about some sales stuff, and that was sort of what we were going to talk to you about first and foremost, and... I asked them about the sales of your first subtitle-only release, Oni-Eye, and I believe Justin said something to the effect of, well, it wasn't a failure, and kind of want your take on that. Like, how would you characterize that?
Well, a lot of that is what the customers want, and it's judging how many people want those types of releases. And so, you know, it's a good number for us. Might be... I mean, an okay number for us or a number for us might be a great number for some other company. So it's, you know, it's always you have some hurdles the first time.
Okay. But would you say, like, yeah, we're thinking about doing more subtitle-only releases, or was that sort of an experiment that,
Well, it's an experiment because, you know, we're first and foremost a dub company. And so whenever some of these subtitle titles that we get, that we kind of know that they're really niche-y, that might not have the amount of sales to do a dub, because sometimes the dub costs more than it costs to acquire the show, and so that's what you're taking a risk on, is the English dub. But it's like, well, this is a show that, you know, people would want out on a DVD or a Blu-ray, so let's do it. So that's kind of the decisions that we have for that. And a lot of it is, it's a, you look at the streaming numbers, but then sometimes, you know, with streaming shows, you might have really high numbers with an okay sales, and you might have some that are like, they're okay streaming numbers, but wow, all the people that watched it wanted to collect it. So it's that's always the gamble you have when putting out a show with an English dub.
And by really niche, you mean full of existentialist dread. that was a joke. Anyway,
I think it's like anything that you would pitch to IFC, and they might take it.
Okay,
it's all, yeah, niche.
Right. So, can you give us sort of a general characterization, like besides Dragon Ball and Titan, big hits, things that were surprise successes, any surprises?
The surprise is how well receptive that the Model Live Action movie did. It performed very well.
That was actually one of our top seller. It actually has been top seller at some of these past conventions we've done.
It's in our top five.
So people will see this, and we'll show them the trailer at the convention, and when they see the trailer, they're like, done.
And they're like, you're using the name Yamato?
No, they'll be like, what? Isn't this Star Blazers?
Yeah.
Like,
sequel.
Yes.
What's that phallic ship?
Shooting at me.
Yeah, I mean, well, your price point on that one I was a little surprised at, because on Amazon it's consistently like $12.
Well, that's Amazon's pricing. I mean, they buy from us wholesale, so that's Amazon's pricing.
Okay, yeah, it was just.
But also, it's not just Amazon alone. I mean, it's a bestseller at Best Buy, at regular pricing, at Best Buy pricing.
Cool. Wait, so does that mean you're going to license a whole bunch of Star Blazers?
No.
One guy's using his keyboard. Uh-huh. Oh.
Well, it's the you know, the live action and the anime are different rights. Just because we release it on, you know, this live action movie, I mean, don't infer anything else.
Well, the new TV series already has a home.
Yeah, it already has a home.
Yeah, you can pay like $50 for four episodes or whatever it is they're charging.
It's the blue Robotech VHSs.
Any underperformers? Anything where you had hopes for it and it didn't quite match what you were hoping?
Well, we were expecting huge numbers out of Jormungand. It performed really good, but we were just thinking that would be one of those that would do well, but then kind of gain more life out of it. Okay. So, you know, it's like for our bestsellers, it's Akira, the Dragon Ball Z Blu-rays are performing to our numbers, which is really good.
What a shock.
The crazy thing is Dragon Ball GT is like in our top eight. That box set just still performs, and it's crazy. For new titles, you know, One Piece collections always are good. Fairy Tales, we had really good numbers with Psycho Pass that were performing extremely well. And then, you know, our catalog, surprisingly enough, High School DxD is in our top five. Well, surprisingly or not surprisingly.
Not so surprising.
Or not.
Yeah, it's
we've already had two questions on Twitter, DxD and DxD, so not surprising at all.
It's, you know, of the genre titles, it's our best seller.
Yeah, there it is.
And then Soul Eater, Hellsing, and Yu Hakusho. It's amazing how...
Still Yu Yu Hakusho?
Absolutely. It's amazing how much of nostalgia people get, because it was on, you know, it was on Adult Swim when they were first launching that. You know, it had its run and people are still into it. Good content will always find a home. People say, well, I have an anime collection. I'm kind of new. What do I go to? And then it's kind of like, you know, you know, people have their top five, top 10 recommends. And I think all of that is just, you know, word of mouth with just friends telling other friends or just seeing it or just, I remember that. I'm like, oh, I'll get it now. That's kind of what it is.
You were hitting up to talk about catalog earlier, but say about catalog is a wonderful thing to have.
Well, catalog is, I mean, that's, it's been that way for a long time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just kind of like you have people that want the new bright and shiny, and then they kind of want the quality. So,
yeah, we've been throwing out some random titles at some of these conventions lately. Cat Planet Cuties was doing really well on save. Ergo Proxy's been selling a lot.
It's the perfect fit to your collection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that reminds me of what I was going to ask. So, what any new news with all of the Sunrise back catalog stuff that you guys got announced last year?
Yeah, unfortunately, no. Nothing's new on that. We don't even have materials for the majority of those types of things.
A lot of it is with materials. It's also clearance on using extras, because the extras you saw that were released, with through Bandai, they have to get cleared again for our use, and so a lot of the timing is getting those clearances because we want to put a lot of the stuff out there, but then with the clearances on some of these extras, you have to get through the person that was actually on the extra, getting their approval. And then with all the materials, it's finding what studio and what house and what, production house and what studio and which storage locker they're located in, and then getting the right materials. So it's a process. I mean, when we were doing all the titles with Junion, it took a while, but we just don't want to put something out where it's like, here it is, it's just a video, deal with it. We kind of want to put more than just the video. We kind of want to put as much as we can get, and if there is like, well, I don't know if we can do that, it's like, well, can we? So that's kind of what we're doing. We have meetings every week about materials and approvals, and so those are always on our list, working through them, and so to do it right takes time.
Well, one of the other things I sort of wanted a characterization on was you did two big LE boxes. You did Psychopass, which you said sold, was a good seller for you, and then Kami-sama Kiss, and those are two very different shows aimed at very different audiences. How did Kami-sama Kiss do?
Kami-sama Kiss did, it did to our level of what those types of shows do. I mean, it's not going to be, a Best Buy bestseller. We know that, it attracts the people that have bought Italia, that have bought Fruits Basket, that bought Oron, and because, the director for Fruits Basket tied into that. And so, it's not going to, it hits that audience, and they're receptive to it. That's why we kind of wanted to do something that within the story lent itself to creating a special edition like that. And then our decision was we wanted to see how people would react to that type of special packaging. And we kind of wanted to do two different genres. And we thought Kami-sama Kiss was the best choice. Opposite of Psychopass.
Okay. All right, we better get back to these questions because we have not scratched the surface yet. All right. Roots of Justice asks, what's up with the sudden emphasis towards announcing new shows and movies via press release or Easter egg instead of at conventions?
Well, conventions are a great thing for us still, but they are only a portion of what we do here at Funimation. In regards to how we talk about our news, news happens when news happens. So,
and it's again, there's so many avenues now.
Yeah,
we used to have to just rely on conventions because there wasn't a giant Facebook, open opportunity out there.
But I mean, we don't like to wait on letting you guys know that we're working on something new. Once we get clearance to do it, we want to let you know as soon as we can. And so, I mean, sometimes it's the option of waiting. Even if it is a few days or whatever, sometimes we don't even know until after the day after the convention happened, and but we need to announce it that week. In other instances, we can plan out a full launch plan for announcing something at a convention with an event, with something exclusive that happens there. Stay tuned for AECON this weekend, and we might have some news for you if this gets up before then. But, you know, like Adam was saying, we've got a lot of venues to talk about the things we do. We have a large following online that we've generated thanks to the fans following us on Facebook, reading our blog, following us on Twitter. I mean, I like to pride myself on saying that we have the largest social following of any anime company in the U.S. And why not talk to your 1.6 million likes on Facebook, you know, with a big news announcement? You know, conventions are great, and we do appreciate that. When we do an announcement at a panel, you know, we'll have press there, we'll have, you know, you guys there, Anime News Network, or whoever in the audience, also being able to echo the message that we've announced at a panel, and that's a great thing to do. But, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do this stuff now. It's this game, this anime game that we play, is changing every day, and we want to take advantage of as many venues as we can to make as much impact as possible.
Yeah, I've been arguing for a long time that, like, making announcements at cons only just seems really an outdated way of doing things at this point. Like, you know, it's one way to do it, I guess. But like you said, you know, having that social media presence, you're going to make a bigger impact if you just do it online.
Yeah, looking at how big Battle of Gods went this week, weekend, definitely showed a lot of love online.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to be able to announce a show online, and even if we do an announcement at a convention, my team and our digital user experience design team has to work on getting all of this stuff live on our site and on our social media and scheduling. And people have to realize this is a Saturday evening, Saturday afternoon when this is happening, and some of this stuff has to be manual. So that means me asking our team to, hey, make sure you're physically there in front of a computer at 6 p.m., on a Saturday to launch the site, while my team is going to be in person talking about it, as well as promoting it socially and scheduling in all the Tumblr, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, the email newsletter posts. I mean, all of these things at the time, so that we don't trump ourselves on accident by talking about it. We have to schedule this. I'm like, okay, so it's going to take us 30 minutes to get to this portion. It's going to take us 10 minutes to get through this portion of our panel. So I'm going to estimate that our scheduled posts are going to go up at, you know, 6:45, and you guys are going to have to launch this site at 5 minutes before that to make sure that the cache is cleared and that the site is populated across the redundant servers.
There's a billion different things.
Yeah. And so sometimes we just need to get it done. And we're all in office, and we can get it done. We're all in office, too.
Yep, not making people work on weekends is a really good motivator. So Emperor Brandon asks, why no LE release for Railgun S when the first series got one? Any possibility of a Blu-ray for that franchise?
Don't have an update on that one right now. I know we still work on some stuff with the Railgun, but don't have an update right in front of me.
But still no LE for Season 2, but Season 1 got one, so what the hell, man?
Buy the LEs, and that usually helps us make an LE for the next season.
Yeah, the question kind of answers itself a little bit. All right. Okay. Jay Betteridge asks, is there any risk that Bandai might send you censored masters of the Bebop dub, like what happened with Discotech and Blue Submarine number 6? So these are people worried about getting these TV broadcast version of the Bebop dub as opposed to the DVD version of the Bebop dub.
I wouldn't expect that to happen, but I can never say never. But I think we will try our hardest on our part to make sure that we are getting the full unedited versions of everything when it comes to materials as much as possible.
And we do know that people in our production department listen to this podcast. So I was asking Jesse, how's Canada?
And as I said, there also is a lot of people who actually also have a lot of love for Bebop. in this one, so we'll be looking for striving even extra harder to make sure we get the best materials possible for
which isn't players. Really possible because we're striving really hard all
already. Yes, it's going from 99% to 99.9%. So,
well, you know, on the plus side of things, you know, the UK release of the Bebop Blu-ray is out and it has the dub, and I don't think anyone's raised that issue. I haven't watched the whole thing myself, but I didn't notice anything.
Cool, that's good to know.
So I don't know.
All right.
Check everything. Always check everything.
And then double check it.
Yeah.
Omar Lopez II asks, a while back you used to stream some movies for free on YouTube for a weekend. Did this help or hurt sales?
Yeah, I know, Shark Dog.
It's a promotion.
Yes, promotion, actually. No, those things kind of are all for helping sales. So that's a good question. What do you call it? Yeah, we those who are aware, sometimes we release a movie on a release day on a Tuesday, and the weekend before we show like the subtitled SD version. Basically gets you hyped up to go watch the full dub release, all the extras like that. So it worked out great for us because we get some eyeballs on the movie, and also people would see that promotion and right around it would be a link to either buy it or information about the release itself and go, oh, maybe if I can't watch this weekend, they'll go still buy it on Tuesday. So it's been a help.
We just haven't done it recently.
Yeah. We're busy.
A lot of questions about getting the dub cast back for Ghost in the Shell Arise.
That one, the dubcast, you know, you got to take this from two perspectives. You can be your fan who has watched the series here, and that's all they've been exposed to. Now take it from the perspective of the Japanese release, where they've actually already redubbed all the characters. They have different Japanese actors for all the new/younger versions of themselves in the series. So, you know, as far as what we're doing, nothing super specific right now.
Nothing's planned out for you. So big stay tuned on that.
Okay. This is a really specific question. I have no idea whether or not any of you can answer it, but I'll ask it anyway. Dylan Birch asks, during the simulcast of Attack on Titan, you were able to get translated lyrics for the openings and endings. However, watching these episodes on Funimation's website reveals a problem. Both openings have parts that are sung in German as well as Japanese, especially the second opening. While it's too late to fix the first opening, will it be possible to translate the German lyrics in the second opening for the eventual Blu-ray and DVD release?
How many tweets was that?
This was an email.
That is pretty specific. That's a translation question, which none of us are in the translation department here, so I don't know about that. Yeah, I wish I had a direct answer for that one. Yeah, not sure on that one. So, but again, we'll go ask.
Okay. Well, maybe now they know. Similar question to one we asked earlier. Megan Milling asks, why weren't the Attack on Titan chibi shorts dubbed?
The DVD release. Home video release?
Yeah.
They weren't? Because...
Back to the whole basically what we dubbed and subbed, what we call for extras. Yeah, not sure on that one 100%. We'll have to go back and just... go ask about what's going on with the DVD extras along those lines. So, no direct answer on that one.
Okay. MD Geist, the one and only, asks, any chance Cowboy Bebop could see a nice release with an art box and booklets like Serial Experiments Lane had?
Maybe even better.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
The bigger shows I do bigger things with, so again, there's always way too early to say what the plans are yet. But you'll love Bebop, so anything is very truly possible here.
Well, we'll try to give. We will give Bebop the treatment it deserves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking an Ein plushie where you open up his belly and you pull out all the discs.
This isn't Star Wars. You can't shove a thing inside of.
This wasn't a real dog.
Can't do that. Maybe.
They should have made a Star Wars collection retake.
Yeah, we still went up as just a Tauntaun. Yeah, and they actually do smell.
I can go into a man babe version of.
Oh god, that's a flashback.
Do it.
There's a booth worker.
Lance as man babe.
That's an anime expo. Just promotion waiting to happen.
Man babe out there working the booth.
If we could get man babe working the booth, telling Cowboy Bebop, that would be awesome. People who don't know who Manfei is, just YouTube AX Manfei And there are some awesome dance moves.
I believe you have a lifetime ban to overcome there.
Well, then we'll take them to Otakon. We'll take them. We'll take Sakura.
Manfei Tour,
we'll
USA.
Take them to Ace.
Also, you know, this was this was at least 10 years ago, so I can imagine Manfei may have put on a little since then.
Crap. You know what? It has been 10 years ago. Now I remember that. That's kind of
It's been a while.
I wonder if he can still fit into that outfit.
Oh, let's not find out together.
Okay,
let's
find out. Here's the sad thing. Here's what I know about this. First, they did lift that lifetime ban, so they let Manfei come back. And then he retired it because even he thought it was getting old.
So, oh, man.
That's a favorite part about this podcast right now.
Right. Well, maybe we could put, like, Manfei and Apollo Smile together, and we can have, like...
Hey, Josh, you
like, you know, return of the... of you know, just the return of all the awesome...
Lance Haskell's jokes that will never die.
Oh, come on.
How about we do a from a show quickie and get Justin in the costume?
Okay. A lot of people asking about that Full Metal Alchemist 2003 Blu-ray because they just announced it's happening. I assume the answer is yeah, we're looking at it.
We're Googling it.
Okay.
Well,
you're like, wait, it did?
Well, part of that is it's like with all those, with all the rights and everything.
That's
an acquisition, and so part of that is that's in their court. Mm-hmm. And if that gets cleared, or if that is working on our side, then that would be it. But you know, if we want to say, oh yeah, we're doing a blah blah blah, why would we? I mean, I you know, that would be something that. You would probably want to wait for something cool to announce.
Once we get the information, we'll definitely let you guys know.
Yeah, I totally thought that was another. I thought it was another thing. So
yeah,
Full
Metal. Like,
I was like,
I
don't know about.
Why is there a Blu-ray from 2003 that we don't know about?
Yeah,
I was like, the original series
coming out
of
Blu-ray. Okay, now we're following you.
Okay.
It's not just some guy named Ray we painted blue.
Correct.
We are running out of time, right?
Yeah, we call it, got about 10 more minutes.
Okay, great.
Power rounds, go, fat, lightning.
Lightning round. Lightning answers.
Branko Berkson asks, we're actually coming to the end of our questions here. Branko Berkson asks, will you ever try licensing a sports anime ever again?
Well, we're streaming Ping Pong. Check out Ping Pong, streaming now on Funimation.com.
Exactly. It's all about Ping and Pong.
I'm not bored of it.
Not bored of it yet?
I'm not bored of it.
How's that doing anyway? Because that's one of those Yuasa shows that's usually kind of a tough sell.
It's an interesting art style that's not typical for most stuff that's popular within our audience. So it's more artsy and it's a really cool, interesting story.
Because a lot of the stuff is you have with anime, with the genre, you have so many different styles and just everything. So. It appeals to its own audience.
I'll tell you, if you want to see more stuff like Ping Pong, you should watch Ping Pong.
So I'm not going to get an answer is what you're telling me.
Yeah, well, we certainly did get a lot of... So you're streaming Ping Pong. Does that mean we're going to get it to Time of Galaxy on DVD?
We already answered that one, yeah. I think, right?
A lot of those.
Where's
always
Ping
get
Pong?
A lot of those. Also from Branko Berkson, do you watch the viewing stats on other streaming sites like Crunchyroll to decide what shows you're going to license?
Well, they don't.
So are you telling us that Crunchyroll will give us their streaming stats?
That would be pretty cool. But yeah, overall, basically, we look at other places for basically how content's doing. Even if it's like a trailer on YouTube, it's getting a lot of hype. You know, basically, we look at that too.
Well, a lot of stuff these days, it's you get pitched before. Everything's announced. I mean, everything's broadcast. So you don't really have access to look at anything. The only thing they really can look at is if it's based on a manga, you look at the manga sales, you read the manga, you think, oh yeah, that story can correlate. Okay, it hits this audience, boom. If it's an original story, you just, you know, back what they did back in the day, they give you an 8-page booklet with kind of like a summary. Here's the character designer, here's what the story is, here's the world summary, and you go off of that.
Those were wonderful.
So, to answer that question, we look at all the data available to us when licensing or looking at new shows.
Okay. Actually, I think that wraps us up. So, guys, once again, thank you so much for stopping by and giving us an update. I look forward to trying really hard to get you to come back in about 6 months.
Love to. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Adam, Lance, and Justin for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a little review. We'd appreciate it, and we'll see you all next week.